We need a real investigation. I don't think we have one yet.
Yes, it's true. And yes, it is a crime.
Well, thank you, Cleta Mitchell. Thank you for that explanation. Really interesting and kind of appalling.
Thank you,
really.
Tucker.
Cleta Mitchell is somebody with great courage, and she's involved with your litigation and lawsuits and all of this stuff. She literally gave up her whole practice not to get paid. She saw how corrupt it was, how disgusting it was, how dirty it was. And I want to thank you on behalf of everybody in this room and everybody in this country. You are a hell of a lawyer and tough. And that's what we need.
Welcome to this week's podcast, Who's Counting? With Cleta Mitchell. This is our podcast about all things related to elections and election integrity and all the things that citizens can and should be doing to find out what's really going on in the election process in America and to take back our election system. We're very honored today to have with us a citizen activist and leader from Virginia, Ned Jones. And I'm going to let Ned tell you some of the things that he has done. But first of all, I'd like to say welcome, Ned. Thank you for joining me. And thank you for sharing your experiences and your expertise with our audience of people who care about elections. Ned, welcome.
Well, thank you so much for having me today, Cleta. I really look forward to our conversation.
Well, Ned, let's start with tell our audience a little bit about you, where you're from, and how you ended up just your journey to being able to be involved in the election integrity movement in America. So let's just tell everybody who you are.
Well, it's been quite a journey, but I was raised and grew up in New England in Massachusetts. I went to college there, and after college worked in the private sector with a long career in management. However, in the 80s, we were living in New Jersey, and I found myself involved in politics for the first time and actually ran for city council there. Unfortunately, the first year I lost by 4 votes. I did learn the meaning there that every vote counts. And the next year I ran again, it happened to be Ronald Reagan's reelection year. And so we were bookends on the ballot, Ronald Reagan at one end and Ned Jones at the other, and we were swept in with a large majority. But I did become very interested in politics at the time. I only served as a councilman, and then our family moved, so I really wasn't that involved, but always had an interest and was always a supporter of President Trump. Actually, I had hoped that he would run much earlier, and he didn't, but was so happy to see him run in 2016 and win. And then for the reelection in 2020, I really followed that race very closely and told anyone who'd listened that Trump was really ahead and he would win unless the Democrats cheated. And on election night, I think that realization came to me. So the next day, I started researching the 2020 election. And one of the things that was very important to me at the time, having been a poll watcher the day before, I saw many voters come in that were told when they tried to vote, they had already voted. And they said they had not. It didn't mean a whole lot that day because of the mass mail-in voting. There was over 70% of our vote by mail. I figured it was some kind of a clerical error or some kind of mistake was made. However, I started hearing it shortly after the election all around the country. Many, many people were saying the same thing. When they tried to vote, someone had voted for them. So I felt like that was something I should look into. And that's really what started my work as a citizen researcher.
So now, Ned, did you ever find out, because I heard that when we were in Georgia, and then I heard it in other states. I honestly have tried to determine from that what actually happened. I don't know that any of us have been able to find actual proof of exactly what had happened. I guess the only thing I've thought is that perhaps people just somehow were able to use the voter list and send an application in and say that pretend to be somebody that they weren't. That's the only thing I can figure out, but I've never been able to understand how we could go about researching that particular question.
Well, I think that's the answer. I don't think we know how that happened, but I think that's the answer, that somehow, especially in Virginia, where there's no ID requirement, no signature requirement, anyone can be the imposter for another voter, especially with mail-in voting. However, there's a few questions that haven't been answered. How would the imposter get the ballot? How would the imposter apply for the ballot? So that was one of the things that I started checking out, and it did lead me to a organization that did a mass mailing of absentee ballots to a large portion of the voter list, 2 million actually in Virginia for the 2020 election. And that may have something to do with what we're talking about.
Yeah, let me just kind of stop you there, but because that is something that we really do need to try to get to the bottom of. But before we go into some of your research, tell everybody what efforts you made in 2021 to try to keep that from happening again, because I think this is something that people ought to do everywhere. How to keep people from basically claiming my ballot. So tell everybody right. What you came up with.
Well, one of the good things about all the research that we did since the November election is that we were able to come up with some strategies to what I call mitigate the irregularities, we'll call them. And one of those was this voting imposter. And what we said was, if you vote on the very first day of early voting and you vote in person, not by mail, but by in person, you're marked as voted, and then no one can steal your vote. It's the safest way we know to prevent what we had heard last time. And you know, it's interesting because since the election, I haven't heard it once. I'm not sure that we stopped anything, but we may have. And so we called it Claim Your Name, Claim Your Vote, vote on the very first day of early voting in person, not by mail, don't wait till election day, because that way you're protecting your vote. The other thing that it does as well, an added benefit, is the campaigns no longer have to chase you for your vote. The voter record shows that you voted, and so you can be taken off that list, and they can go after voters who haven't voted.
You know, that's a really good point. And I agree with you, Ned. Of all the things that we've heard from poll watchers in Virginia, I don't know that that's an issue that we heard this year as we did so many, many times in so many places in 2020, that when people arrived at the polls, they were told, oh, this shows you've already voted. That's something we should check out. But I do think that having so many people watching everything in Virginia was a big help. But talk about the you've been associated with an entity known as the Virginia Project. What was that? How did that get started? And what was your role?
Yeah, the Virginia Project is a partisan pact in Virginia. It was started in 2019 by a gentleman named David Gordon. He was very upset that in Virginia, we had lost the House of Delegates, which meant we'd lost the governorship, we'd lost the House of Delegates, and we had previously lost the Senate. So his goal by setting up the pact was to take back Virginia in the 2021 election, which is the next time we have a statewide election and the House of Delegates as well. So he started the PAC and was very involved in election integrity from that point on. When I started my search in November, it was very hard to get what I'll call traction with officials, with the media, with really anybody, until I found an organization called the Capital Research Center. And one of their authors, Hayden Ludwig, listened to my story about people saying they had already, were being told they had already voted when they tried to vote. And so he wrote an article about it and published it at the Capital Research Center. And
then about that issue.
Yes.
Now, what was his conclusion in that article?
Well, it's like anything else. You know, it's very hard to prove, and I had no proof. And at the time, because of cancel culture, I was anonymous. I was the anonymous poll watcher who was reporting this story. And again, we came to no conclusions. It was just me expressing what I had felt. And then, of course, the Capital Research Center does a lot of research as well. They had a whole section in their website, Influence Watch, about the organization, the Center for Voter Information, who I was talking about at the time. And so the article was not a conclusion, but it was just an expression of what I was thinking. But then in January, David Gordon at the Virginia Project was trying to put together how people, how they found voters to vote for them as imposters. In other words, he was thinking the same way I was. And we happened to meet. And then I joined him as the election integrity director. And really, you know, that's what I've been doing since January with the Virginia Project. It led us to some interesting things, though. We started recruiting volunteers for poll watchers and election officials in June. We had training on our own. I did 4 webinars in August to enhance all the other training that was going on and all the other recruitment. And it was really, as you know, an all hands on deck approach. But the amount of coverage we had was key in this election, I believe, because it went a long way to mitigate whatever might have been going on.
So let's go back to the article that Hayden Ludwig wrote, and let's start with some of the, I guess the main thing I want people to understand is when you started doing your research, one of the things you found was the number of organizations, groups, entities that are funded by left-wing sources and donors that have basically infiltrated our election system all over the country. So what I know you've made you've done research on specific ones of those, and we're going to post all of that on the website along with this podcast so people can actually see the research that you've done if they want to download the information. But let's start with, was the first group that you researched the Center for Voter Information, or Center for Voter Participation? Was that the first one?
Yes, it was. And you know, it's all open source information. It was just a Google search, really, that turned up the Center for Voter Information with a name. Now, it's kind of interesting because during the campaign, President Trump was talking about 500,000 absentee ballots that were sent out incorrectly in Virginia. Well, he didn't have the story exactly right, but it's something that did happen. The Center for Voter Information, I found out with a simple Google search, had sent out 2 million absentee ballot applications in Virginia. And 500,000 of those in Fairfax County, our largest county, had gone out with the wrong return address on the envelope. So county residents who sent it back were actually going to the city, Fairfax City. Now, this is what President Trump was referring to. However, it was easily explained by the Center for Voter Information as a mistake by their direct mail house, but the same thing happened in 2 other states. You see, they were operating in 25 other states with the same mass mailings. I found their return address in 12 states, all of the swing states and a few more, and they were doing the same thing. They were sending out mass mailings of absentee ballot applications.
And now tell everybody, what is an absentee ballot application?
Well, in Virginia and other states, if you want to vote by mail, you submit an absentee ballot application to the election officials. It either goes to your local registrar or through the state. You can do it online here, or you can send it in the mail. But what it is, it's an application with your name and address, date of birth. If you do it by mail, it includes your last 4 of your Social Security number. And when the registrar receives that application, they'll send you an absentee or mail-in ballot. What the Center for Voter Information did is they partially filled out these applications and then sent out, like I say, 2 million of them to voters in Virginia and to voters in 25 other states as well.
And they did that in 2020 and again in 2021?
Right. Now, in 2021, here in Virginia, they sent out 2.1 million absentee ballot applications partially filled out. And they also sent out 2 million in New Jersey, the only other state with a statewide election this year. And I did find them operating in New Jersey, again, using a post office box as their return address. You see, they try to make it look like they have a local presence in these states. Here in Virginia last year, it was a UPS store mailbox called a suite. And this year it was an actual post office mailbox, just like in New Jersey. But they use the same method in all these states.
And do they send those applications to all voters equally, or do they target?
Well, it's interesting. They claim to target minorities, single women, and something called, I believe it's the New American Majority of Voters. And these are targeted Democrat-leaning voters. However, what I asked this year is anyone who heard me talk and you get one of these applications in the mail, please send me a copy. And I can tell you, plenty of Republicans received them, plenty of males received them. So it wasn't just to the targeted group that they talk about. It was actually more widespread than that. You see, we have 6 million voters in Virginia, and they sent the applications to a third of our list.
That could be a problem with their mail house again, because they really didn't want those Republicans to send those in.
That's true.
So tell us then about the Center for Voter Information, and when was it founded? Who is it? What's their pedigree?
Well, the Center for Voter Information also has a sister organization called the Voter Participation Center, and the names are almost interchangeable. And what they do is they do mass mailings for voter registration and absentee ballot applications. The founder of the Center for Voter Information is a lady named Paige Gardner, and she's a former Clinton aide that goes all the way back to the Bill Clinton years. And she founded the Center for Voter Information in 2003. They're a 501c4 located in Washington, D.C. And she and a gentleman named Tom Lopak are the board of directors, both Democrat operatives. Now, the funding is interesting because the funding for all of these organizations is a long list, but they leave out an organization that's really behind a lot of it, and that's called the Arabella Advisors. So you're not going to see that name directly funding these organizations, but what they do is they fund the intermediary organizations. They've really created a spider web of funding in these left-wing operations. But there's five primary funding organizations for the Center for Voter Information. And it's anything like the League for Conservation Voters, Human Rights Campaign, Next Gen Climate Action, which is Tom Steyer. You may remember him from the campaign last year, the Sierra Club, and a catch-all group called the Tides Foundation, which is really a series of organizations.
And so they get, so this Center for Voter Information, voter and its sister organization, the Voter Participation Center, they get money from the, they're started by a left-wing Clinton operatives. The board are two Clinton operatives. They get money from all these left-wing groups, but they're nonpartisan, right?
That's correct. I believe they have to be nonpartisan for their tax status. And it's very interesting to me how they maintain that, because they do file all the reports. They publish all of their work. And so it's widespread and well-known, you know, what they're up to.
Well, I think that their lawyer actually sent something to all the registrars in Virginia over the summer, said, we're getting ready to mail all these things. And so just know that you're going to be flooded with mail from us, which I thought was kind of an odd thing to do. But they definitely don't have to worry about getting canceled like people on our side do.
That's right. And, you know, I did a FOIA request to the individual that received that letter and asked for all the correspondence regarding this year's mass mailing. And it was very interesting what I got back. There was correspondence from our commissioner of elections, Mr. Piper. He was encouraging the registrars to participate in this. There was all kinds of concerns about confusion, which there was mass confusion because of these applications that were mailed out. You may recall that the Fairfax County was accepting some of these applications without the Social Security number. And I found out from the people up there that most of those applications were from the CVI, Center for Voter Information mailing. So some of the people that actually used it got confused or not, but didn't fill out that Social Security number. So there was mass confusion from the start when they first announced they were going to do it.
So tell me again, what did the state election administrator, Chris Piper, what did he have to say about this?
Well, he wrote to the registrars and encouraged them to, to participate in this process with the Center for Voter Information. Now, one thing that we haven't talked about, and this is called the NED theory, but they had a unique arrangement with the Postal Service. They did not get the return mail back when an absentee ballot application could not be delivered. They got a list of some sort from the post office department. And this list is what I call a list of unlikely voters. It's individuals who are registered to vote, but not at their address. And so we're really investigating that. And hopefully that's going to get us some answers if we can ever get to more details about that list.
Right. And that information would have to come from the postal authorities, I suppose.
Correct. And we have a FOIA request into them on a federal level that's been denied twice now. So we're trying to decide if we really want to pursue it at this point.
And what does the Postal Service say is the reason for denying your request for information?
The last denial letter that we received recently, just in the last week, is because that information is not available. So they're saying that it doesn't exist. The only alternative left to us would be to appeal it, which we're hearing is a long, drawn-out legal process.
Well, it is, particularly if they say that the data doesn't exist. That's very interesting. That would be a very difficult next step, but we'll keep. I'm sure you'll keep looking. We're going to keep working on how we can get information from the postal authorities about how this works with these massive absentee ballot mailings.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because we don't think of the post office this way, but it's really like a precinct. I mean, if 70% of the ballots are flowing through the Postal Service, you know, we have to start thinking about how we're going to, like you say, get the information, but really monitor what's going on with the Postal Service because they are so responsible now for what happens in our elections.
They play a huge role, and I consider that that's the reason that the left went berserk a year ago when Louis DeJoy, who was a Trump supporter, was named the Postmaster General, and their collective heads exploded the day he got there. And it was really quite phenomenal to read all the disinformation and all. And now I see where President Biden has appointed to the board of the Postal Service someone who is the head of the National Vote at Home Institute and who was very involved in the distribution of Zuckerberg money in Wisconsin. So the left never stops. They are fixated on inserting themselves into every step of the process. And we're just trying to get our side to understand that. And that's why we are glad to talk to you today.
Well, you know, and it's so interesting because now we know they've been at it for a long time. And so many people that I've talked to have said, wow, I've never heard that. Is that right? Is that really happening? Because there's really, they've done it covertly and secretly, but really in the open. And it's just connecting the dots. And now we know it's just a massive influence. It's incredible.
So let's go to another entity that you found. So Ned, you started, you know, you find all this information about the absentee ballot, massive flow of absentee ballot applications through this nonprofit organization funded by the left. Now, how did you go from that to starting to find other entities? What happened next?
Well, it was interesting because one thing leads to another that in my search, I found Influence Watch, which is an excellent reference for this kind of thing. They keep track of all the nonprofits in the country. And I started to see other names. And in the media, I was hearing about the Center for Tech and Civic Life, which is the Zuckerberg grants.
Right.
And so really the next organization that I came across is the Center for Tech and Civic Life. And I remember hearing Scott Walter in Georgia, there was a legislative hearing down there, and he gave an excellent presentation on the Zuckerberg grants and how they were targeted to Democrat areas, especially in Georgia, and played an enormous influence on turnout there. So I decided to check that out in Virginia, and I found the same thing, that here is private money funneled through an organization who had a less than $1 million budget in 2019, handling $350 million from Zuckerberg and paying these grants to local election offices around the country including $4 million to Virginia, and most of that money in Virginia and the other states going to Democrat locations, driving up turnout.
Well, I see that you, in your research, you found that of the $4 million that flowed into Virginia, $3.6 million of it went to areas carried by Biden and only $400,000 to areas carried by Trump.
That's correct. And that's what we found in all the other states. And you're starting to hear more about it. There's been a couple of books that have come out recently. Molly Hemingway and Rigged has a chapter about this. There's another book that's coming out, and you're starting to read more about people are really upset because how can a private individual like Zuckerberg, well, and his wife, Priscilla Chan, come up with this kind of funding through a left-wing entity, the Center for Tech and Civic Life, and have it end up being paid directly to local election officials. But I'll tell you, in Virginia, I did a FOIA request to 10 of the top grant getters, 5 Democrat and 5 Republican. And once again, the Department of Elections was behind this 100%. The registrars thought it was a great thing because they had extra money, more or less to spend on what they wanted. There were guidelines, but when you look at how the money was actually spent, it went on drop boxes, it went for additional staffing. It really had nothing to do with the COVID situation that it was supposedly targeted for.
And so tell everybody who is on the board, if you know anything about those board members.
Well, I do. And it's very, once again, it's very interesting because the person who founded it, the Center for Tech and Civic Life, is a young lady named Tiana Epps Johnson. Again, she's a Democrat operative and the first fellow to the Obama Foundation when he set that up, I believe it was in 2019. So she was the first fellow for the Obama Foundation. There were a couple others who helped her set it up, Donnie Bridges and Whitney May, which I don't know much about. And that was in 2012 when they started the organization. They're a 501c3 and they're located in Chicago. Now the board of directors is interesting. Pam Anderson is one of them, and she owns a nonprofit in Chicago. But Tammy Patrick is an interesting name that I just came across recently, and she is on the board here, but she's also an advisor for the Democracy Fund, which was started by the gentleman that started eBay, another left-leaning nonprofit. But she is all over the country talking about mail-in voting. It's interesting. Arizona has a website called Clean Elections in Arizona, and she's the one that gives the presentation on mail-in voting. One thing I've also started doing is I'm going back and looking at the minutes and agendas for the Virginia Board of Elections. It's very interesting what you find. And there she is, Tammy Patrick, giving a presentation in July of 2020 to the board about mail-in voting. Now, it's not an in-person presentation. It's done in a series of slides, but it's all about the United States Postal Service. In other words, she's one of their key advisors. And if you were to look at her history, it's very interesting and totally partisan. The other two I'm not familiar with, Cyril Sheth and Christina Sinclair, to make up the board of directors for the Center for Tech and Civic Life.
So do you have the slides from Tammy Patrick that she presented to the Virginia State Board?
Yeah, what I did, I downloaded the minutes for that meeting, and you can see the actual slides that were presented. It's also interesting that the USPS was involved in this presentation, and a couple of the names we've become very familiar with in Virginia who actually were involved in this presentation to the board.
And who are those?
Bentley and Ben, his name escapes me at the moment, Farmer.
And they're with the Postal Service.
Right. We're trying to get a hold of both of them, I understand, to investigate this further.
So who are some of the sources of funding for the Center for Tech and Civic Life?
Well, they have a very interesting list because, like I say, in 2019, I believe their budget was $1 million. And of course, the Zuckerberg funding was $350 million, but that went out in grants. So their funding comes from the Center for Civic Design. That's an organization we're going to talk about in a minute. But what they do is they design ballots and election materials for election boards around the country, including Virginia. The Center for Democracy and Technology is one of their funding. Facebook actually funds them in addition to the Zuckerberg money. Google is one of their sources. The John and James Knight Foundation, which is a left-wing funding organization. Something called Rock the Vote, the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, the Voting Information Project, and Women Donors Network. All of these are in that spiderweb of funding that I talked about earlier.
And are any of those conservative?
No.
Talk about what the Center for Tech and Civic Life has done prior to its distribution of the Zuckerberg grants, insofar as its relationship with election offices and the EAC.
Yeah, now one of the things they do is they offer free training, if you can imagine cyber training, to registrars all around the country, and many, many of them have participated in that. Here in Virginia, somebody said it was something like 300 or 400 participated in 2020, and they again had training in 2021. They're recommended by the Election Assistance Commission, which is a nonpartisan government commission set up after Bush v. Gore to kind of monitor our elections and our election equipment. But if you can imagine, the Center for Tech and Civic Life is a recommended trainer by that organization. And I did find something very interesting in Arizona when I looked at them after the audit. They offered training to their people, and also I guess it went around the country because it was a webinar. And the gentleman who runs elections in Maricopa County gave a presentation with the Center for Civic and Tech Life about, if you can imagine, signature verification. Now, we heard in the audit.
When was that?
I believe that was early 2020, but there's really no date on the presentation. It's just available on their website. But there were over 4,000 signatures that were questionable in the audit. And here this gentleman gave a presentation on signature verification. But it just shows you how deep these organizations are into our, you know, and it's not just local, it's state and on a federal level, with the EAC and a couple of other organizations that we've found as well.
So what kind of training is it that they're doing?
Well, they're training the registrars about cybersecurity. And the only place that that's really supposed to come up is on early voting, the poll books do access the internet.
In Virginia.
In Virginia, and I believe in other states, because they're all going to these e-poll books. I believe they maintain the voter list in the cloud now. So, of course, that has to be protected. And in general, they teach them how to secure their system to avoid hacks. But I'll tell you, there are IT teams now that we've formed. We have them in Virginia. And when they look at the election system and its cybersecurity, they say it's not that strong at all. And so I'm not sure what the Center for Tech and Life, Civic Life, is teaching them.
It'd be interesting to get those training materials.
Right. But it does give them an entree into the registrars. And I believe that's how they've created the relationship, because shortly after the training in 2020, the offer went out for the grants.
And maybe there might be some correlation between where they did training and who got the grants.
Well, the offer went to all registrars, but as we learned in Pennsylvania, there were discussions before the offer with certain Democrat areas through the Secretary of State and Governor's office. So all of our FOIAs have gone to the local registrars or the Board of Election. It's probably something we should check out here in Virginia, because it seems like there was advance notice to some of the locations.
So we know from, and we've had Scott Walter in a two-part, two episodes talking about, on the podcast, talking about CTCL. Talk to me about, talk to everybody about some of the other organizations you found that are doing business with and have infiltrated various election offices.
Well, one of them that came up in recently is the Center for Election Innovation and Research, which is shortened to CEIR. And they did the same thing. They received almost $70 million from Zuckerberg and his wife, and they distributed it directly to the states and political consultants. That was a little bit different than the way CTCL did it. And the gentleman who founded CEIR is a gentleman named David Becker, who is a Democrat operative that's very familiar to most of us. And he founded that organization in 2016, another 501c3 located in Washington, D.C. There's only two board of directors for the CEIR, and that's Mark Zuckerberg and his wife, Priscilla Chan. Their funding comes from the Democracy Fund, the Hopewell Fund, and something called the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation. Again, part of that funding network that we talk about.
What is the Democracy Fund? What have you learned about the Democracy Fund?
You say it all the time, but they use that word democracy, and there's several of these. But the Democracy Fund is the fund that was started by the gentleman from eBay.
That's Pierre Omidyar?
Yes, yes.
And I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but...
Well, I'm not even going to try, so... But he's the one, and, you know, the funding just goes to different left-wing organizations, and it shows up in a lot of places. And, you know, they speak about their nonpartisan goal to improve our election system, to increase voter turnout and participation. But when you really look at what's going on, it's funding indirectly, I'll say, our elections. I mean, they really are. They've infiltrated it at every level, and the funding is coming from these organizations to really run the elections.
Well, I'm interested that Mark Zuckerberg and his wife are the only two board members.
That's all I can
find. Center for Innovation and Research. And then they push money through to get to election offices.
And it was interesting that it went through consultants and the secretaries of state, because we saw in Michigan, it was like $12 million to two consultants who did media for for Democrat candidates.
Right. So now, what did you find out when you were doing research about who in the Zuckerberg world was more or less pushing out all these activities? Didn't you find that there was at least one person who was sort of in charge of all of this on behalf of Zuckerberg?
Well, the only person that I found with a familiar name is David Plouffe, who was Obama's last campaign manager and then one of his advisors in the White House. After Obama left office, Mr. Plouffe went to work for Zuckerberg in one of his organizations. I believe it was an LLC. It might have been called Innovations, Zuckerberg Innovations, I believe. And so he had an arrangement with Zuckerberg back then. And, you know, he wrote a book, How to Defeat Trump, which I think you said we all should have read before the election. But he was deeply involved with the Zuckerbergs and also on the foundation, the Obama Foundation board. And I already said that the lady who founded the Center for Tech and Civic Life was their first fellow. So there is a connection, but that's the only familiar name that I could find that was involved with Zuckerberg. And may have had something to do with this whole process of providing grants ultimately to the local election offices. I'm not sure that Mark Zuckerberg and his wife would have come up with it on their own.
So there are more. Wait, there's more. I have at least four other entities that you found that were doing business, and you may have come up with more since I've looked at these, but tell us about some more of these entities that, And this is, these are all entities that do business in Virginia.
Yes. Now, this is an interesting one. This turned up because I told you I'm starting to look back at these minutes and agendas for our State Board of Elections. And what I found is an organization which I was familiar with called the Center for Civic Design. And their mission is to design ballots and other voter election day forms and materials to help in the election, to make it easier to vote. Well, they were in the agenda for the Virginia Board of Elections in March of 2018, designing ballots, designing materials, and making a presentation, again, with slides to the board. This organization was founded by someone called Whitney Quisenberry and Dana Chisnell in 2013. They're located in Maryland, another 501c3. And those two founders are the board of directors. Their funding is also from the Democracy Fund, the James Irvine Foundation, again, the John and James Knight Foundation, the John D. and Catherine MacArthur Foundation, which turns up in several places, and something called the National Science Foundation. So again, very similar funding and very involved because the Center for Civic Design is all over the country. There was a story from the California recall election. There was a hole in the envelope where supposedly you could see how the voter voted. Well, the Center for Civic Design was the culprit who designed those ballots as well. And whether the hole was a mistake or intentional, we don't know, but it's the same organization that designed that ballot. Now, it's interesting that the Center for Civic Design is recommended by the EAC, the Election Assistance Commission, as another vendor for the kind of materials that they can provide. And I believe they may even be in what's called the EAC toolkit, which they provide to local registrars.
And they end up, they don't do this for free, I wouldn't think. I would think that the jurisdictions would pay them to design ballots and materials.
Well, I'm not sure what a 501, you know what a 501c3 can do, but everything they do is under that name. So I'm not sure if they can do it for profit.
Well, that's interesting. It would be interesting to know more about them. I wonder why Sheldon Whitehouse doesn't get all in a twist about these dark, all of these, quote, dark money groups on the left.
So, you know, and it's so true. It's so true because, you know, they're doing a heck of a lot more, actually.
And yes, they are. They have a lot more money than the ones on the right.
Yes.
So what's next, Ned?
Okay, here's one that's everywhere. This is called Ballot Scout. Now, Ballot Scout is run by an organization called Democracy Works. And I believe this is a free service. What they'll do is they'll track absentee ballots in the mail with a website called Ballot Scout. So what it does, it reads a barcode on the envelope that the registrar mails you your ballot in and gives you different statuses, that it was mailed, that it's in transit, that you received it. And then on the envelope, if you mail your ballot back, they actually track that so you know when it shows up at the registrar's office. Now, I found Ballot Scouts in the Virginia Department of Elections 2020 post-election report, which was a massive report telling everybody how fair and honest the election was. And there was a section about Ballot Scout and how they would provide this service to track, they did provide the service to track ballots. The operation was founded by somebody named Seth Flaxman and Catherine Peters, and they're located in Brooklyn, New York. Again, a 501c3. Those two individuals are the board of directors. They're funded by familiar names, the Democracy Fund, James and John Knight Foundation, and the John and Catherine MacArthur Foundation. Now, here's what's interesting about Ballot Scouts. And I'll go to this year when we had a statewide election here in Virginia. I wanted to see the process of absentee ballot application and how it comes in the mail. So I requested one and I did it online. and actually received one from the registrar. So I was going to vote early on the first day. I wasn't going to use it, but I wanted to see how it worked. So I showed up that day, turned in my ballot, and the voting system in Virginia, the voter list, says I voted early in person. However, Ballot Scouts says my ballot never arrived with me. It was only sent by the registrar, but that I never received it. So it's possible that it wasn't scanned properly by the Postal Service, because that's how Ballot Scouts gets their information. But we heard during the election, someone was throwing around a number of 300,000 outstanding absentee ballots. Well, there was never that many. And the only source they would have had for that is some kind of a Ballot Scout report. And we're not aware of a report like that, but that would be the only place they could have found it, unless they were just making it up. Now, the other thing about Ballot Scouts...
Well, let me just interrupt you right there, though. Mark Elias sued the post office about 10 days before the general election in November. Now, early voting had been going on in Virginia since September 17th at that point. But I think he's the one who said there were all these absentee ballots that were outstanding and was suing the post office in a couple of jurisdictions, demanding that they, quote, speed up the process for the absentee ballots to be sent and received. But what you're saying is they may have gotten that information from Ballot Scout, which would mean that we should figure out a way to, I don't even know how you would go about FOIAing that, because neither of them are public. But if Ballot Scout, which is funded by left-wing groups and funders, and that they are providing that information to the Democratic Party and Mark Elias, who then uses that to file a lawsuit, that would violate their tax status.
Yeah, and you know, there really is no other source for that. And that is the number that they threw around in that lawsuit, that there was this massive amount of absentee ballots in the mail. We were tracking it every day, and we knew how many were outstanding at all times. There was never 300,000, according to our information, and that was coming directly from the state. But like I say, if you were to check my ballot right now, it says I never received it. In other words, it would be in a backlog of undelivered mail. So there's something there. And there is one other thing, too, I'll tell you, that with Ballot Scouts, your ballot in Virginia has to be postmarked by election day to count, and then there's 3 days that it can arrive after the election. When there's no postmark, the election officials use Ballot Scouts tracking. So they're relying on this system to tell them when a ballot has been mailed that does not have a postmark. And again, you know, you can just wonder what could happen there with that organization.
Well, here's what I'm wondering, too, is if you were getting information from the state Board of Elections, or was it the state board that was tracking your ballot?
Yeah, they have a classification called issued. And what issued means is it's been sent out to the voter. Now, you don't know if the voter's received it yet or not. You just know that it hasn't been returned, either as an in-person vote and turned in, or an absentee ballot mailed in. But the number that we were tracking was never that high.
Well, it's interesting, because it sounds as though the state board is not using Ballot Scout, which is good if they're not.
But if they reported that number, they may be. I mean, in other words, that may be the number the state was getting from the Ballot Scout analysis. We just don't know.
Well, it's also interesting. You said you turned in your ballot when you went to vote in person. And it should show, it should be recorded at that point that it was, is there some category that where it should show that it was turned in or surrendered?
Yes. As far as the state goes, it's a category called deleted. In other words, when I showed up with my ballot, it was spoiled. And in the state voter rolls, it's marked as deleted. And then I voted in person early.
Right.
The problem with my ballot is Ballot Scouts. If I was to check it right now on their website, it would say I never received it. So according to Ballot Scouts, it's still pending in the mail.
That's really interesting. All right. So what next, Ned? What else have you found that you need to tell people about?
One of our favorite subjects. After our election, Virginia had something called the risk-limiting audit. Now, this is an audit that's performed in many states. I checked Michigan. I believe there was one in Georgia. And in Virginia, we had one. Now, I'll just tell you, to me, it's not really an audit. It's basically a waste of time. They checked 1,200 ballots out of 4.4 million, which to me is not even a sample size. But it is something that they did, and I did find it on their report about the risk-limiting audit. Of course, I knew it was coming. We had observers there, but it was really a waste of time. Now, Verified Voting is an organization that runs these risk-limiting audits. It was started by a gentleman called David Dill in 2004, and he's located in Carlsbad, California. Another 501c3. They have a couple on their board of directors who I'm not familiar with, Barbara Simmons and Mark Lindemann. They're funded by the Democracy Alliance, which the Democracy Alliance is a group of progressive left-wing donors that are unnamed that donate millions of dollars to the fund, which is then distributed to organizations like this. The Threshold Foundation, and then once again, John and Catherine MacArthur Foundation. So what they do is they run these risk-limiting audits, and then a report comes out telling everyone there was no fraud, absolutely no fraud, that this audit proves the elections were fair and honest. But when you're looking at 1,200 ballots out of 4.4 million, to me, that's not a true sample size. And this audit doesn't prove anything. It's just a way to...
You know, I had never heard of a risk-limiting audit. You have an audit, you have a recount, until I was in Georgia. And finally, I started asking, what is a risk-limiting audit? What is that? And I started tracking it back, and apparently it was something that some group of left-wing professors came up with as a means of actually conducting any real audit. And certainly, as we've heard so much about audits and the need for post-election audits, which is something that I think that a lot of us think should be written into the statutes, that there should be independent audits conducted of election offices, not auditing themselves, but being audited by another expert, an independent auditing firm, just like the audit banks or audit nonprofits or audit financial institutions and other companies. But this risk-limiting audit is just another invention of the left, as near as I can tell, that they've now gotten, they've peddled it to the election apparatus of the country, and now it's everywhere. And now you're telling me that there's this thing called Verified Voting that is funded by the left wing, and they're the ones who are promoting them.
Correct. And you know, it's interesting because in Michigan, I saw the report. It's like 50 pages long, and it just goes on and on and on about how fair the election was. And that's basically what the shorter report in Virginia said. And it's just their way of actually, you know, justifying the fairness and honesty of the election. But to me, it's a waste of time. But once again, it's another issue that's promoted by the Election Assistance Commission. They're behind these. And if you go to their website, you'll see a lot of information about risk-limiting audits.
Oh, all right. There's more.
Now okay, what? This organization is related to the risk-limiting audit. It's called Voting Works, and they're involved in voting machines and election software. And I found them in the same report by Virginia, although I was aware of them before the report. And they were founded in an incubator called the Center for Democracy and Technology. And what they do is they start these organizations in their incubator. They're located in San Francisco. Another 501c3, the board of directors are Jerry Berman and Neola O'Connor. Now, their funding comes from George Soros' Open Society Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the John D. and Catherine MacArthur Foundation. Now, the program used in risk-limiting audits is called ARLO, and that's a program that was developed by Voting Works, which is used in these audits.
So let me understand this. So the Center for Democracy and Technology incubates Voting Works, and then Voting Works produces this software that is used in these risk-limiting audits, and it's all funded by the George Soros Open Society Institute and the Ford Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. That's where it came from.
That's pretty much it, yeah. And
No bias there.
None at all. And what's really interesting, the Department of Homeland Security partnered with Voting Works, this organization that we're talking about, to pilot the use of something called its voter verification software in 6 battleground states during the November 2020 election. So here it is in the Department of Homeland Security, and you all know what happened there. The head person had to resign because of issues that came up after the 2020 election. So
when he announced it was the most secure election in American history, right?
And
Chris Krebs, I remember him.
That's right. And so
Center for Security and
CISA.
CSIS, right?
So it's everywhere, you know, and it's so interesting because they're definitely involved in the federal level, the state level, and the local level, and you can see where the funding comes from.
And they're supposed to be engaged in working on voting machines and election software.
That's correct.
And Center for Democracy and Technology, that's what they're supposed to be working on, is voting machines and election software?
No, they're a nonprofit, and they're incubating these organizations that I believe Voting Works is a profitable business.
Oh, I see.
You know, they're charging for all this.
So Voting Works is a for-profit, but it was set up by the Center for Democracy and Technology.
Correct. And, you know, the ARLO program that they use in the risk-limiting audit tells them exactly how to pick this sample. And what you find is they're pulling one ballot out of a box of 500 in 300 precincts around the state. I mean, it's not, to me, a valid sample. And I think the kind of audits, you know, that we're talking about would be much more in-depth to really see what's going on.
So Ned, this is all fairly depressing, but at least knowing about it is helpful. What are some of the things you're working on now?
Well, I think what really happened now is I was able to take all of this information, and I have shared it with everybody. You know, we have so many organizations here in Virginia working on the election integrity problem. And I was able to share all this information. And I think collectively we came up with some great strategies because the information is so important to have now, like early voting, we called it eyes on every ballot. That's what we called our training, because you really do. You know, people weren't thinking about eyes on every ballot in terms of early voting. We didn't do it last year in 2020. So I think that if we can get some of these things that we learned, call it the Virginia model, around the country, I think that's exactly what's going to really help us get a handle on what's going on. Right now, here at the Virginia Project, we're starting to take a look at some, you know, we did great in the election this year, but there are some things we're actually looking at to see if there's anything untoward there that we should be aware of for 2022. We're doing a deep analysis right now of 2020. We were able to get the entire voter list and the voter history list from the state, which in Virginia, can you imagine, they charge you $12,000 for. Some states it's free, but in Virginia they charge you. So we're
Some states are denying people access to it at all. So
right, yeah.
It ought to be publicly available information for free to everybody.
It really should.
But well, Ned, if somebody wants to, one of the things that you and I are working on is putting all of this into a citizen's guide that we can post on the website that people can download. And if you were going to be able to tell people, what should they do step one, step two, to try to understand whether any of these entities are engaged in their local election system or in their state, what would you tell them to do?
Well, so much of the information is what I call open source, and it's available at different websites. And really, it's not that hard to discover what's going on in your state. You go to the Board of Elections, and I've recently just, I had always looked at some of the minutes and agendas, but now I'm looking at a lot of them because a lot of what's gone on has been approved by the state people who are running your elections. That's a good place to start. Keep your eye on your legislature. Watch out for what they're doing. Our legislature made it very easy to I'll use the word cheat, because I think that's what happened. When you have no ID, no signature, drop boxes everywhere, 45 days of voting, this is the kind of thing you have to watch out for in your state. Watch Congress. You know, they're trying to do some incredibly nefarious things with our election system. And then just Google searches. You know, some of the organizations that I mentioned today, you can Google them in your state. What I do when I'm looking at a different state is I'll just put in the Center for Voter Information mass mailing Michigan. And you'll be amazed at how much information will come up when you do that. We had a presentation last week from a gentleman in Wisconsin. And when you look at the CTCL in Wisconsin, it's incredible what happened. And he's actually investigating that. But a simple Google search will show you what they actually did in detail. So that's really where I've gone for most of the information. And again, government entities, the Election Assistance Commission is a good one to go check out. Homeland Security has some of these people involved. And you'll see how they're interacting in your state.
Well, Ned, you have been an amazing patriot over this past year and all the work that you've done and everything you've shared with everybody. And we really appreciate this. It's daunting. As I told Ned when he first told me about this in June, honestly, I couldn't sleep for two nights. So I'm hoping now to figure out, we have to all collectively figure out what we have to do about it. But knowledge is power. And that's the first step. So Ned Jones, we thank you so much for all that you've done and all that you're doing. And we appreciate your being with us on Who's Counting on our podcast. And we'll look forward to more information from Ned as the months and the 2022 comes upon us. So Ned, thanks again. And thanks to everybody for listening to this episode of Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to Who's Counting. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Conservative Partnership Institute's Election Integrity Network. It is filmed and recorded at CPI Studios in Washington, D.C. Editing is by 39 Bravo. Please help us grow this show by sharing this episode with a friend, and be sure to subscribe and to give us a good review. We need your word of mouth, because big tech can't be trusted and tries to cancel us daily. Help fight back by visiting whoscounting.us and sign up for this podcast, for our newsletter, and to become part of the Election Integrity Network.